This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to another edition of Radioactive Magazine with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. Humanity is faced with the twin existential threats of our climate crisis and the onset of the sixth mass extinction of species, both human-induced. In regard to our climate crisis, there is much greater public recognition of the ongoing and serious consequences from the human-induced warming of our climate and the need to take action. The onset of the human-induced sixth mass extinction is harder for the vast majority to perceive, much less feel. However, the reality of this existential threat is every bit as real and tangible as that of global warming. As time goes on, the impacts from both of these threats will increase in number, intensity, and impact. There will be an ever greater recognition of the need for transformation, and one of the fundamental transitions required is a movement towards regenerative agriculture. In the book Drawdown, regenerative agriculture is identified as a powerful method to reduce fossil fuel emissions, sequester carbon, and significantly enhance soil health. Drawdown ranks regenerative agriculture as number 11 on their top 80 list of actions to solve our climate crisis, given a tenfold increase to 1 billion acres by 2050, from just over about 100 million right now. To assist us in our discussion on regenerative agriculture, we have with us today Ms. Catherine Kelly, the co-founder and executive director of Cultivate KC, a local nonprofit organization whose purpose includes demonstrating how care for our soil provides benefits to the farmer and our earth. In my view, Cultivate KC is one of the keepers of the flame for one of the transformations humanity must engage in to evolve towards a sustainable future. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being here. Let's start out by just, can you tell us a little bit about your personal history with organic farming and your motivations for the co-founding of Cultivate KC?
Yeah, I grew up outside of El Dorado, Kansas, and my parents weren't farmers, but my neighbors were, and so I spent a good chunk of my childhood around hog operations and traditional, conventional agriculture. So I drove a tractor and drove hogs to market and herded cattle and did all that. And I mostly was growing up, I was not enthusiastic about being out in the country. Moved up to the Twin Cities, became a community gardener, actually a backyard gardener there, and then I ended up in Boston. And while I was out there, what I realized is that every time I changed jobs, I would send off for ag school catalogs, thinking, oh, maybe there was something there for me. And eventually I found the local food movement, and I spent about 5 years out there working on other people's farms, organic farms. Loved it. Felt like it engaged me more fully than anything I'd ever done before. And moved back to the Midwest because I knew I couldn't afford land out there, and I wanted to be back closer to where I came from. So I started my own farm, Full Circle Farm, and was certified organic from the get-go. Used a lot of the practices that, that organic farming is based on. So lots of cover cropping, lots of use of organic mulches, as minimal tillage of the soil as seemed feasible. Over time, my farm was in the city, which was a deliberate choice on my part. And over time, I realized that there was some really special stuff about being in the city as opposed to outside El Dorado, Kansas. And it made it possible for consumers to connect more directly to me and to my farm. It made it possible for people to come out and volunteer and tour. I was living the same life as my customers in a lot of ways. And so we had a very similar framework. And I started realizing that there was all kinds of opportunity for for increasing food production in the city, for increasing community connectedness to food and agriculture, and for food and agriculture to really be a contributor and a driver for a good quality neighborhood and for a good quality city. And I realized that there was a need for more organic farmers. And so I talked to another farmer who he and his wife were selling at the Brookside Farmers Market. He had a degree in urban planning. We began to talk and decided to launch Cultivate. So that was about 15 years ago, so in 2005. And it has been amazing, you know, seeing how our community has grown, seeing how the conversation has changed, seeing how many more people are interested in sustainable agriculture practices and are using them, innovating them, and putting their own unique spin on how to grow good, healthy food for the community.
Well, that's really an interesting story, just the way that folded out for you. Can you tell us a little bit about the kinds of activities that Cultivate KC does now?
Sure. We take a systems-based approach to growing our local food and farm system. So we, I would say, our primary, our sort of core strengths are in working with farmers and in helping farmers develop new farms, develop their farming skills, developing the full array of skills it takes to run and operate a farm business. So we provide technical assistance to farmers. We have a mini grant program where a farmer can apply for up to $3,000 for something that will help develop their farm productivity and its capacity to feed Kansas City. We have a collaboration with Catholic Charities where we work with refugees who've come here to the U.S. With farming skills, and we help them start and operate independent farm businesses. We started a project originally with the Menorah, what was then the Menorah Legacy Foundation, to help increase food access for low-income families. We do policy work. We're starting a new farm at the old Westport Junior High School where we're going to really be focusing on demonstrating, you know, good climate resilience practices. So we educate consumers, we educate the general community. So we really kind of look at the food system as a whole and figure out where, you know, what are leverage points that either we can address or that, you know, other folks or farmers or nonprofits can address.
What do you think the potential is for urban farming? And you know, Kansas City is a pretty large metro, but I know in Kansas City proper there's a lot of vacant lots and there's a lot of but as far as urban farming and gardening goes, what do you think the potential is for Kansas City?
I think that every vacant lot we have right now should have a farm on it, should have a forest on it, should have some kind of productive green space. So green space that produces food, green space like trees that sequester carbon. Leaving them sitting vacant doesn't do anybody any good. So a lot sits there, the soil is impermeable, water is more likely to run off from it, it's more likely to collect trash and not add to the value of a neighborhood. Even for a vacant lot to be planted to perennial cover crops would be an improvement because cover crops can sequester carbon and can improve soil tilth. So I think it's a huge resource. It has cooling benefits for the city. It has a stress relief impact on people. Mm-hmm. More green space we're around, the better we feel.
Right, right. You know, I think in the cities to come and in Kansas City to come, my own sense of things is that we need to bring as much of nature into the city as possible, there's no question about that, and I think to the extent that any city, including Kansas City, can have urban farms and gardens, the better off our population is going to be.
Absolutely. So. The city also generates a lot of organic resources. So Missouri Organic Recycling, with its composting, has you know, is taking, you know, city waste at our Westport farm. We're using leaf compost, wood chips. So there's a way that we are, you know, for urban farmers, we are right next door to the very materials that can help us improve our soil and increase our carbon sequestration.
You know, in the book Drawdown, they talk about regenerative agriculture increasing soil organic levels from 1 or 2% to 5 to 8% in about 10 years, and that means that there is a sequestering of 25 to 60 tons of carbon per acre, additional to the 1 to 2% figure. And the authors in Drawdown note that the U.S. Department of Agriculture is now running trials on farming techniques not involving tillage or chemicals. And the quote is, evidence points to a new wisdom. The world cannot be fed unless the soil is fed. And regenerative agriculture is one of the greatest opportunities to simultaneously address human, soil, and climate health. Given those comments, what are your responses to those observations or those facts, basically?
That's their facts. It's their, you know, they are right on target. Mm-hmm. I think as we look at carbon sequestration in agriculture, we need to look at, you know, small urban farms, you know, minimal footprint, probably less carbon sequestration capacity. We need to look at the ways that the ranchers who are producing livestock around the metro area and across Kansas and Missouri can improve their practices through rotational grazing. We need to look at row crop farms in our region and start developing policies and practices where urban people are supporting those farmers in changing their practices to do and provide an environmental benefit of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and increasing carbon sequestration. So I think we have to look very broadly across agriculture. We also have to look at food waste and just how we waste organic matter.
You know, that sort of dovetails into my next question, which is how much have you seen organic farming grow in the last 15 or 20 years? And the second part of that question would be, how much more openness do you see among mainstream farmers for moving to more friendly techniques towards the earth?
So if you look at the KC Food Circle, they are a group that promotes that helps connect urban consumers to local sustainable
local
farmers
their
directory of farmers has gone from what I'm guessing was probably 15 farms back when I started farming in 1996, up to over 80. And those are just
still not that many.
Yeah, it's still not that many, but our local food system was we pretty much turned it over to national and global agriculture. So there has been a lot of growth. On the interest on the part of conventional farmers, I've been really deliberately trying to have conversations with, like, Farm Bureau members, Farm Bureau leadership. We've got actually a longstanding relationship where they bring their leaders out to see our farms and to kind of look at this different type of agriculture. And last time they did a tour, we broached a conversation about what are people seeing in terms of climate change, what are they doing about it, what's their thinking about it. There's also another farmer, Gail Fuller, who is very engaged with his local community, comes from a conventional ag background and has radically changed his processes and his approaches. I would say that there is not consensus as to the cause of climate change, but there is agreement that it's happening and that farmers are getting hit hard by it. And so what I'm hearing is much more of an interest in, and it's not just me, but much more of an interest in no-till agriculture, which of course requires higher use of herbicides to kind of to knock down crops. So it's got some trade-offs. I'm hearing a lot of interest in what's called precision agriculture. So it's agriculture that really uses technology to reduce, you know, fertilizer applications, pesticide applications, herbicide applications. And so there is a movement towards adapting the practices to be more precise in your use of chemicals. And I think that that's an advancement. It isn't a wholesale,
it's moving in the right direction.
It's moving in the right direction,
okay. Do you see a recognition or a change, an upwelling of a recognition that the industrial model of agriculture is highly destructive? Is there any sense of that? No.
I wouldn't say so. Conventional farmers understand what they're doing as they are stewards of the earth, and they're, you know, proud of that. They've had families do it for generations.
Right.
And there are, you know, it's funny. There in conventional agriculture, we all know about the efficiencies. Some of those efficiencies, in fact, it is lower carbon emissions for one refrigerated truck to drive from California to Kansas City with a load full of vegetables. In some ways, like I saw a study a number of years ago, than it is for 20 farmers to drive down to City Market in our old vehicles, and all of us using fossil fuels. So there's definitely some trade-offs.
I would have guessed it would have been the other way around.
Yeah, I know
that. I'm surprised that you said that.
I think that it was a legitimate. You know, it was a legitimate analysis.
Uh-huh.
There are other trade-offs, though, in terms of how much fossil fuel they use to produce those vegetables and so on. So it's a really complicated picture.
I came across an article today in The Guardian emailed me this article, and they said that the title of the article is "Insect Apocalypse Poses Risk to All Life on Earth." Conservationist warn, and it was the article was dated November 13th of this year, and it said that half of all insects may have been lost since 1970 as a result of the destruction of nature and the heavy use of pesticides.
Yeah.
The report said that 40% of 1 million known species of insects are facing extinction.
Yeah.
And there was focus on the fact that farms need to significantly reduce pesticide use, and that urban gardens and parks can recover by rewilding. And that this was a report that was done from England for the Wildlife Trust by a professor from the University of Sussex in the UK, and that the and that Gary Mantle, the chief executive of the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust, said, quote, "We have put at risk some of the fundamental building blocks of life," and that he went on to say that insects can recover quickly if we stop killing them and restore habitat. And a lot of that has to do with taking action on our farms, gardens, parks, and places of work. So.
Yep, absolutely. I know for me, my frame of reference for that is what it used to be when I was growing up, driving between El Dorado and Wichita, how many bugs you would get on your windshield. And now you drive that same distance and you don't get any bugs or very few bugs. And so just at a direct experience, you can see that. Agriculture, we need an EPA and a federal government that is much more earth friendly, restrictive about approving pesticides, setting much stricter guidelines for how farmers use pesticides, when we use them, where we use them. We need federal intervention in that process. There's a great local movement called the Metro Climate Action Coalition that's led by local elected officials.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them. They've changed their name to the Climate Action KC, and it's Lindsay Constance and Mike Kelly.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And so they're one of the things that they're really looking at is how can municipalities increase carbon sequestration and decrease soil disturbance in the parks by using, compost and looking at how parks can not use pesticides, not use conventional fertilizers. And so I think there's going to be a lot of change on that front as well.
Yeah, I think, to me, there has to be very aggressive action in not using pesticides wherever possible and also guidance from the Department of Agriculture to strongly encourage farmers to move towards methods of farming which do not require pesticides.
Absolutely.
And there has to be a very profound transition as far as that goes.
Yeah.
I think given the fact, most of us are not farmers and me included, and how can citizens in the metro best support the transition to better farming practices and local agriculture?
So I think there is no big easy on this. So I think all of our lives we need to make changes on all kinds of fronts. And so buying organic, there are certainly organic farms that are not, that would not meet regenerative agriculture practices, but they are focused more on increasing soil organic matter and carbon levels in their soil. So buying organic is really important. Supporting your local organic farmers is very important. Connecting to them, buying from them, persuading everyone in your circle to buy from local farmers. Less food waste is important, so compost or just don't waste it in the first place.
Food waste was number three.
Yep.
Globally in terms of reducing carbon emissions.
Yep, absolutely.
I was amazed at that.
That you should get involved in policy. And I know, my inbox is flooded with calls to action from different groups because we are in trouble on so many fronts. But be a voice for sustainable agriculture. Be a voice to help our larger scale rural farmers change their practices in positive ways and in ways that respect, the inherent, those farmers care. They do care about the world that their grandchildren inherit, and we need to find ways to connect to them around that and help them to do better. So get involved in local policy, state policy, federal policy.
I like that comment that you made about farmers and how they really care about their kids and their grandkids and the care of the land. And it's very important that they not be demonized at all.
Absolutely. And, first off, it's not constructive.
Highly destructive.
It's destructive to do that. And, those farmers are doing the best they can with the information they have and the realities that they're facing in their communities. And so I think that, one of the things that I think is especially important during these times is for those of us who live in the city to start making connections with rural communities, to start paying attention to the issues they're facing, and to start understanding that, there are no city boundaries on climate change. Mm-hmm. And so we, all of us, need to figure out how to work together to address it.
I would assume that there has to be advocacy at the city level for encouragement and development of urban farms, and that I'm assuming different policies would have to be developed or
Yeah, and in general, Casey Moe really took the lead on that a couple of years ago. So there is a very positive policy environment at the municipal level, I would say.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Catherine, I'm sorry we could have talked quite a bit more, but we have unfortunately run out of time, and we really thank you for being on Radio Active Magazine and talking about this very important subject today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Community Voices is a production of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It is our way of letting the voices of our neighbors be heard. Any opinions and views expressed are those of the speakers only and not necessarily those of MidCoast Radio Project, KKFI, board, staff, or volunteers.
This is Bob Grove. I'm a professional grassroots organizer here in Kansas City. Kansas City is my home. I've lived here my entire life, and we've seen a lot of changes. And, you know, it's a great neighborhood, and a lot of good things are happening. But we're facing a lot of challenges today. You know, the environment is so threatening, and we're seeing political action that's pulling us out of the Paris Climate Accord, that's pulling us out of environmental treaties, reversing our own environmental laws, retracting our own Clean Water and Clean Air Acts, and basically threatening all of us. You know, global warming, a clean environment is a nonpartisan issue. It affects everybody, whether you're politically leaning to the right, to the left, whatever your religion, your gender, your nationality. We all suffer when natural disasters strike, and we all need to step up and do what it takes to help protect our environment. I'm part of a new group called the Climate Council of Greater Kansas City. We're a consortium of local environmental groups whose purpose is to amplify the voices of existing environmentalists. We've got a lot of great environmental groups working on the ground in the greater metro area, but a lot of them are kind of siloed. You know, we don't know that they're there, they don't know each other's there. So we're working to bring all of those people together and share resources to make a meaningful effort to reverse global warming. We've got a lot of good programs. I'd encourage you to take a look at the website, climatecouncilgkc.org. We produce a climate digest every week. It's just a short email that tells you about upcoming environmental events in the metro area. It contains some links to articles that are important on environmental issues. And it shows you what the various environmental groups in town are doing to make a difference and how you can become part of that, how you can make a difference. We offer educational program to look at things that you can change in your homes or the way you travel or the way you eat that can also help global warming, help reverse it. And most importantly, we show you how to get engaged with the community and work to unify our efforts to make the most meaningful changes we can. If you're already an environmentalist or if you're working to reverse global warming, if you have a group or you have an idea for a group, we encourage you to come partner with us. We have both nonprofit partners and for-profit allies. Our goal is to amplify your voice and make you more effective in making the kind of environmental global warming changes that we see needed in the upcoming few years. This is Bob Grove for Community Voices on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we want to thank Bob Grove, and also before that, thank Catherine Kelly for the information. Next week, we hope to have His Honor Quentin Lucas on, so tune in for that. There's some upcoming events here in Kansas City. If you want to watch the Democratic debates with fellow progressives, KC Progressive Allies, Sunrise KC, KC Tenants Organization are having a Democratic debate watch party at 5 p.m. at Chess Incorporated, at CHES Incorporated at 3125 Gillum Plaza, KC Mo. Also, tomorrow night, 6 p.m., Transgender Day of Remembrance at 4601 Main Street, KC Mo. There's going to be food and music, and there's going to be community speakers talking about the trans struggle and trans power and trans issues. I also noticed in looking at the progressive calendar that there's also a similar event in Manhattan and probably some other towns across the state, both Missouri and Kansas. On Thursday, the Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance is having a fundraising for deferred action recipients featuring pozole and other dishes, including vegan options. That's at The Bite, 23 East 3rd Street at the River Market in KCMO.